The story of Mike Hoare's life, which ended peacefully this week after 100 turbulent years, reads like the synopsis of an absurd, overcooked action movie. Indeed, one episode of Mike Hoare's life was the synopsis for an absurd, overcooked action movie, 1978's The Wild Geese, in which Richard Burton plays a swashbuckling soldier of fortune called Colonel Alan Faulkner, a character whose similarities to Mike Hoare stretched to breaking point the traditional cinematic disclaimer about resemblance to persons living or dead being purely coincidental.
The greatest thrill I get, of course, is the command of men. I'm talking about real men, not a whole flock of Nancy boys. I mean the real McCoy. And I love being in the presence of hard men, not necessarily ruffians, but men who can live hard and not grumble. I like that.
Mike Hoare was, to an almost cartoonish degree, what we think of when we think of mercenaries. A buccaneering rogue in beret, fatigues and cravat, overthrowing or undermining governments in generally poor countries at the behest of generally rich people, equal parts guerrilla commander and showman. Most people would have bristled at the nickname Mad Mike. Mad Mike Hoare understood it as the calling card and the sales pitch, which would help him to more or less invent the modern idea of the mercenary as an effective but handily deniable instrument of foreign policy. Mike Hoare was born in Calcutta to Irish parents on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 1919. He volunteered for the British Army at the outbreak of World War II, joined the London Irish Rifles and later the Royal Armoured Corps. He fought in the famously brutal campaigns against the Imperial Japanese Army in Burma and India and reached the rank of Major. He served with the Chindits, the British Special Operations Units which specialised in behind-the-lines raids.
Chindits, that's the name for the guardian statues that stand at the steps of Burmese pagodas. A name from legend that's become flesh and blood, living guardians of Burma's safety.
After the war, Hoare took himself to South Africa, where he appeared set on a blameless life as an accountant and safari guide, but neither occupation proved sufficiently adventuresome. It was his association with Moise Tshombe which lured Hoare back into uniform. Tshombe was a Congolese businessman who, with the backing of a Belgian mining concern, had declared himself president of the breakaway region of Katanga. He hired Mad Mike to furnish Katanga with a small army of European veterans. Contemporary accounts of Katanga's war with Congo paint an unflattering portrait of Hoare's militia, as opportunists at best, racist war criminals at worst.
The African generally is a realist. His life is spent in raising just sufficient food to feed himself, and nights are spent in dancing, literally. Drinking of beer, which has been brewed by his women folk. These people know how to live. This is the reduction of thousands of years. They're not bedeviled with the problems that we have in civilization.
Tshombe became Prime Minister of Congo Entire in 1964 and hired Hoare once more, this time to fight off a Cuban and Chinese-sponsored communist insurgency. Again, Hoare executed his mission effectively without concerning himself overmuch with the conduct of the men he commanded or the civilian casualties which resulted.
In fact, never an atrocity in my command knowingly perpetrated, and never an order given to that end.
He wrote a memoir of these events entitled Congo Mercenary. Depiction on the silver screen by Richard Burton followed, and a legend was duly founded.
The Wild Geese. Fighting is their business. Killing is their trade. Their mission, to save the life of the president of a new African nation.
Sit still, right where you are, don't move.
Everybody okay?
All self-promoters tempt hubris, however, and Mad Mike was no exception. In 1981, Hoare transformed himself from mythologized shadowy eminence to punchline. He was enticed out of retirement by a plot to overthrow the government of the Seychelles. He recruited a few dozen similarly superannuated adventurers, and they flew to the Seychelles disguised as a Johannesburg drinking club, ye ancient order of froth blowers, on a jolly boys' outing. It went about as right as it was ever likely to, and about as wrong as it could. Hoare ended up spending nearly 3 years in prison, released at around the time the global laughter abated.
I assure you, Mr. Chairperson, that the Seychelles coup was neither discussed nor approved by the South African cabinet or the State Security Council.
Mad Mike was, in many respects, a creature of his times. In a modern world in which secrets are harder to keep and the militaries of even the poorest countries are better organized, it is difficult to imagine the Mad Mike model of mercenary prospering. In 2004, a coup d'etat was attempted against Equatorial Guinea by a group of South African yahoos who seemed to have regarded the Seychelles affair not as a cautionary fable, but an instruction manual. It was a humiliating disaster.
It was an outrageous plot that ended in humiliating capture. And Simon Mann, of the privileged English background, would spend 5 years in some of Africa's most notorious prisons.
But Mad Mike's heirs are still with us. In the 1990s, the private military outfits Executive Outcomes and Sandline operated in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Angola. Private military contractors were a feature of the United States interventions in Iraq and Afghanistan. In Ukraine, Syria, and the Central African Republic, Russian operations have been outsourced to the privateers of the Wagner Group. In Libya, Syrian mercenaries paid by Turkey defend the official government from the Sudanese mercenaries helping to besiege it. There may not be another Mad Mike, but there will still be people doing Mad Mike's job, as long as someone somewhere wants the results of military operations with none of the responsibility for them. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Muller.